everybody to pack your mics. Thanks for coming back. We are the Top Chef podcast from the creators of Read It and Weep. And we welcome to Controversy Headquarters, you guys.
Done.
This is the home of bitter disappointment and anger and frustration and confusion. And if you've got some feelings...
Or is it?
Yeah, or is it?
Twist.
If you've got some feelings, there might be a place for you today. Wait, is that your twist, Chris? Is that you're just going to not have any feelings about this at all?
Or is it?
Okay. All right. Let me introduce you to your panel today. It's going to be super fun. And when we introduce everybody, I'd like you to say your biggest disappointment in Top Chef history. Bummer, controversy, whatever it is. The most let down you ever felt at the end of an episode. I'm going to start. I'll take the easy one. It's obviously Blaze losing at the end of his first season when he was still nice. Yeah, it's an easy one. I know. And I'm not saying...
legitimately good chef Stephanie.
Totally good, and I was happy for her, and I think she's done great things with it, but it did seem like it was his to lose, and he had done so well to cook a disappointing finale. It was just a bummer. It was a bummer, and I was sad for him, and then he said the thing later about how he thought it was the most important meal, and then it turned out it was the first meal he ever cooked for his baby. That was more important, and I don't think that's true either, because the baby doesn't remember, and this was on TV, but still, like, it was still a big bummer. You got to admit, you felt a little bit then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mine's connected, but it's not my turn yet.
All right, Megan, what's yours?
Well, I would say that my biggest disappointment is any time there's an elimination quickfire. And I think it's because it seems like, you know, it goes so fast and you don't even know what's been stolen from you because you don't get to experience like a real challenge.
Right.
And I just think it's totally a bummer.
Megan, also quick follow-up question. So what you're saying is your stomach was in your shoes when Aaron went home this season in the elimination quickfire?
I felt cheated. Yeah, huh. I did.
It's not as much television as she's been promised, Chris.
Yeah. So would your return to innocence be described as
All right, so that was that's us in Portland. Joining us in San Francisco, it's Ezra and Sarah. What are you guys' top disappointments?
So I'm going to piggyback off of yours, Alex. It's when Blaze won.
When it was Mean Blaze.
When Mean Blaze won, and I didn't feel a joy. And that was, I don't know, that was a weird moment for me generally. I felt like that was also a loss of innocence.
Yeah. I mean, it probably would have felt worse if he'd lost, but it did not feel great when he won.
No, it's just, I don't know, like, I got what I wanted, but I didn't want it anymore.
It's the right present, but 10 years too late. Thanks, Santa.
Yeah.
Sarah, what's yours?
So you guys remember Trey? I have no idea what season he was from.
Oh, three? Yeah. Of course.
Yeah. He was on... Didn't he come back on All-Stars, too?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, oh, that's true. Well, but when he was on...
Marcel season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was Marcel season. That's right. He tried to shave Marcel's head.
No. That was a different African-American cook.
Oh, yikes. Sorry.
Anyways, when Trey was first on, I really liked him. He was always a little bit of an attitude, but he cooked really well, and I'll never forget he made the most delicious-looking thing I think I've ever seen on Top Chef to this day, which was shrimp and bacon grits. Yeah. And when he got eliminated, I was very sad. And it wasn't like... It was a surprise elimination, not like the biggest surprise. I don't think anyone thought he was going to win the whole thing, but he was damn good. And
yeah, I remember being surprised by his elimination. I thought he went home too soon. That was in season 3 in Miami.
There we go.
Yeah, and that was, I think he went home for Restaurant Wars.
Was he front of the house or dessert?
He was...
Something dumb.
No, I mean, he was... Let's see. Well, yeah, so he was the... It was his team, so...
Yeah. So he was executive chef.
I think that's what happened. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's what I remember.
Oh, wait, no. Sorry. No one got eliminated there. I have no idea where I got eliminated.
He got eliminated in episode 10, which was the second half. They made him redo Restaurant Wars that year.
Oh, that's right.
That was the one. Oh,
they were like, this is too crappy, even for Restaurant Wars.
That is what happened.
Yeah.
Even for Restaurant Wars. So then it was like, okay, I guess Hung, you just get to win now. And Hung was like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, just the rest of the season. I mean, it was all Hung all the time.
Yeah, I mean, Casey came on strong later.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was a better chef than anybody gave her credit for.
And then there's Mohawk, Mohawk Dale.
Mohawk Dale.
Yeah. All right. That was. Did we do yours, Sarah?
That was me.
That was yours. We did both. Okay, great. We're going to Brooklyn. We have Chris and Tanya joining us today, guys. What are your top disappointments?
Go ahead.
I have one word for everyone, and that word is Hosea.
That Hosea beat Carla.
Oh, that's so true.
And Stefan.
Carla and Stefan.
Oh, Carla. Which,
and good taste.
Yes.
And again, I think it's one of those things. It hurts because, like, I think the win was probably fair. I think his food probably beat out Carla and Stefan's, but it didn't work because Hosea was just an unbelievable jerk the whole time. And I had so many problems with him personality wise that to this day, I'm still just like upset that he gets recognized as the top chef.
I mean, the only reason that Stefan didn't win is because they didn't give him points for the cigarette that he smoked during service.
Stefan felt like he was a better chef and also that he wasn't trying at all. He was like, you know, if I win, that's fine. If I don't win, it's not. That's fine. As long as I come off as sexist, I will feel like I've had a victory today.
I think his sexism emerged more strongly later.
It did. It came out way worse
when he's massaging
later.
Kristen Kish's feet.
He was always touching.
Ugh. Anyway, keeping it short and sweet, Hosea, giant disappointment.
Yeah, totally. All right, Chris, what's your top disappointment?
See, I'm torn, so I'm actually going to cheat and say two.
Okay.
Mm. One is that Spike Mendelsohn lasted as long as he did.
Yeah. Little spike hate. Yeah. Some spike spite, as we call it.
And the other is that Chef Obi-Wan, Jonathan Waxman, did not last as long as he was surely destined to on Top Chef Masters.
Totally. Yeah.
He felt like he gave up to me, that he just didn't care as much later on. But
and for good reason. He has a career and a life. And cooking competitively for nothing, basically, is, you know.
I'm sure there were some dogs that were going to get some money.
Wait, can I have a bonus disappointment?
Yeah, go for it.
Season 7?
Yeah. Oh, all of season 7. Angelo.
Yeah, that was Angelo's season.
Kevin.
That was DC, right? That's the lost year?
Yeah, DC.
Oh, and Kevin won, right? Yeah, that was a bit boring.
Yeah.
No, Kevin is the
best beard.
He's Schmappleby. He's the one I forgot.
Right.
Schmappleby?
Yeah, that was me. That was his.
Dapple Schmappleby.
Dapple Schmappleby. The winner of Top Chef season 7. Because
when I couldn't remember.
It's what you missed, sir.
When I wasn't there.
Yeah. Yikes.
Sorry.
Okay.
I don't. I can't even picture Kevin Spagraga. I cannot picture him.
He's sort of a shorter, stouter fellow.
Stocky.
With a
Schmapple
fade.
Dappleby.
I feel like he has a 5 o'clock shadow, like all over his face.
He opened the Applebee's.
No, it's a fade and a 5 o'clock shadow.
Yeah.
It's different.
Oh yeah, that guy.
Cute. I liked him. He was fine.
Oh man!
Remember when Angelo had a fever?
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember Top Chef desserts? That was a big disappointment.
I liked it. I liked both seasons of desserts.
I still love you, Gail.
I love Gail.
I could do without Gail, and I still love that show.
Huh. Let's make food clothes.
All right. Let's get into our show today. Let's talk about our new favorite disappointment. But first, let's launch into the quick fire, guys.
Yeah.
This is where it all starts to go downhill. Chris, you sound excited, so why don't you describe the quickfire for us?
Okay. So the quickfire is another one of Top Chef's famous technical challenges, but this is not the taste test, and this is not the mise en place. Instead, it's Jacques Pepin.
Which are both still not here, which is concerning to me.
It's true. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's Jacques Pepin, who literally wrote the book on French cooking technique. And he displays his favorite dish, which is Dover sole with, pile of stuff, basically asparagus. He makes his own cherry tomatoes. He's got artichokes. There's a cream sauce. There's a butter rose that he makes effortlessly, as if by magic.
Okay, well, let's pause for a second. The butter rose was very cool. The make your own small tomato, it's really just like he squeezed a big tomato.
I don't know if I like that or
what
it's
he says is
stupid.
Everyone will say this is the best tomato they've ever had, because it turns out nobody likes the skin or the seeds.
Yeah, maybe that. Yeah. I feel like I feel like that one might be a little gimmicky, and
maybe I'll say that because you're Jacques Pepin, and like, you're like, but oh, Jacques, this tomato that you made is great. Thank you. You can have more food now.
The Dover sole curled into little spirals, and everything is just so in a way. And so the chef's challenge is to recreate that dish in 30 minutes. Yeah. And the chefs with French technique, like Shirley and Nick, and to an extent Nina, do fairly well. And the chefs that never went to cooking school, Carlos, don't do very well. Okay. And Stephanie messes hers up and Brian messes his up. So the tops are Shirley and Nick, to no surprise. And the bottoms are Brian and
everyone else.
Stephanie. Well, Nina's actually in the middle.
Right.
So it's Brian and Stephanie and Carlos who are at the bottom. And, you know, like, they have problems skinning the sole. They have problems with the artichoke. They have problems with, you know, Nina actually forgets to have her burners turned on. For a little bit, which is that was a rare miss.
Which gets you the middle problem.
I mean, if she still got to the middle by that,
yeah, right,
she
must have been,
you know, doing all right.
It seemed like timing was a really big issue for everyone, and that's why the fish didn't get cooked, etc.
Yeah, if you don't get that sole skinned all in one piece, like Stephanie learned, it just takes forever. And so she had some time management problems, and basically, you know, the goal wasn't who can create the best new thing. It's who can replicate this the best. And it turns out you need exactly 30 minutes if you're doing it perfectly. And the two tops, Nick and Shirley, did it pretty much perfectly. Nick actually won through some ineffable whatever.
Yeah.
But the gestalt.
A je ne sais quoi.
Yeah, the gestalt. The gestalt. And so he actually, shockingly, won immunity with six chefs left.
They bum, bum, bum.
And so he won immunity for this challenge. And everybody else got a stern talking to from Mr. Pepin.
No, Mr. Pepin was so... I mean, he was kind of stern during the judging, but he was also really kind when he was walking around. Like, he said a lot of things. Like, well, you just got to keep at it. And, like, it's all in the... Yeah. It's the thought that counts. Like, he said a lot of just really kind...
kind things for somebody who is way too successful to give a shit.
Effort.
Do you think... So, he had a cooking show with Julia Child. Jacques and Julia. I don't know. Like, years and years on PBS, I think. I was just wondering, guys, informal poll. Do you think they ever hooked up?
Ooh. Wasn't the reason she learned French cuisine was because she was in France with her husband?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
I'm going to say that probably no, but if they did, it was by the book.
The technique.
Technique.
Yeah, like, I'm sure it was really precise.
Yeah, he wrote the book on technique.
This seemed to me like a crazy hard challenge, and to have this many good chefs like stumbling so badly, but you know... I think Nick had it right. I think anybody who's worth their weight in salt should have been able to do this dish.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nick was clearly worth his weight in salt.
Anyone want to run some numbers on that?
Yeah. So I'm
$1 a pound, roughly?
It's about $36 a pound for table salt. And,
really?
That's a lot.
Whoa, really? Where are you buying your salt, Alex?
Do you guys know how much a pound is?
It's a shit ton of salt.
No, that is not that much. I could get you. You're overpaying for salt. Talk to me. I have a salt guy. It will be way cheaper.
Whatever. The point is, so about $7,500
in Chinatown, you talk to Ping.
I'm saying it's about $7,500 is how much my weight in salt is. That's all I'm saying.
Wow.
So if you're worth $7,500 or more, you should be able to cook that dish. Huh. I think is how that logic worked.
Okay, $5 on Amazon. I think you're overpeeing. I'm paying, Alex.
You could be overpeeing, too.
Overpeeing.
All the salt I'm taking in.
Depends on how much salt you're getting, because then you're holding on to all that water.
Right. I just did a quick Google search for price of salt, and the first thing said about $36 a pound. So
holy shit. Well, get new Google.
Look at Amazon. It really was only $5.
All right, $5.
Welcome to my next new segment, salt. Secret gold? Question mark.
Cash for salt?
I would send them some salt. I don't know. The problem is you have to send them the salt ahead of time, and then they appraise it, and you just have to deal with whatever you get in the mail.
You can get 50 pounds of rock salt for $6. That's not right.
No, it's rock salt. It's for ice and snow.
No one wants rock salt.
Okay, we're done with salt. Moving on.
So that was the quickfire. So let's talk about this. Let's talk about some investigative reporting, you guys. So my question to you is, do you remember immunity with six people left? Is this unprecedented?
Yes. I was going to say yes.
The answer is yes.
Mm-hmm. According to some very careful research on Wikipedia.
We spent a long time.
Which is not as easy as it sounds.
No, it was. We had
no,
several sources.
I totally believe you. And thank you so much, guys, for doing that research. Because it feels wrong, but it's helpful to know that it's backed up.
So there were twice, season 1 and season 9, where they gave immunity with 7 chefs. And then the rest were 8 or 9. And season 6 may have been 9 or 10. We had a little trouble with that one. But it's usually 9. It's usually 8 or 9. Almost every season. There was there were like 6 seasons in a row that was 9. So 6 is very low.
Mm. Yeah. I want to put this out to the group. Why do you think that is? My own personal thought is that perhaps they couldn't figure out an advantage for this challenge, for the elimination challenge. That would be...
They didn't get a sponsorship.
Yeah, you pick the team, or you pick which side your team is cooking. I mean, that's pretty standard. Yeah.
Or you get a bonus knife.
This is the time. Yeah. This is the point in the competition where you're supposed to win. You win instead of immunity. You get either money or a supposed advantage that's secretly a disadvantage. That's the two things they give you, and there was no secret disadvantage on this one.
Yeah, we haven't actually said what the thing is yet. Like we haven't said like,
no, we're still just talking about the quickfire. The quickfire was fine. Let's talk about the elimination challenge because that's where the meat is, and I think that's where we want to do.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, all right. Ez, why don't you tell us about the elimination challenge?
Okay.
Set us up for controversy.
French. Spanish. Different kinds of food.
Same
different
ingredients.
Kinds of language.
Different kinds of language. Different kinds of flan. So we had a couple kick-ass judges, kick-ass chefs. So, Chef Serrano and Chef Kren of the Spanish and French cuisine masteries, respectively. They each have 2 Michelin stars apiece. So I guess that means that they get to like call up like the Michelin guy whenever they want, and you know, just like I don't know, redo their tires and their
get
car.
Free tires. Yeah, I think that's what that means. You know,
no matter what.
And if I'm not wrong, it's within the United States. They're known for having 2 Michelin stars in the U.S.
Which is really hard to do.
Which is rare and difficult
because the French are Franco-centric.
Sure.
I
think that I feel like that was called out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So basically, they say, okay, there's actually a good amount of overlap in ingredients. So both cuisines have almonds, olives, chicken, mussels, and chocolate. And so they're going to have to do break into 2 teams of 3 people each and have a 5-course meal, each highlighting a different food item.
But, and here's the kicker, not designed by the team.
Yeah, that was weird.
No.
The menu was entirely put together and then coached by those judges.
Right. Correct. So one team was French food. The other team was Spanish food. The French team coached by Dominique Kren. The Spanish team coached by Julian Serrano.
Yeah. Did everyone else have a huge crush on Dominique Kren?
Because
she had the best energy
pretty cute.
Ever. No, I mean,
and
just
a nice
like,
haircut as well.
I would love to work next to her.
I feel like it's her fault what happened, so I'm not entirely comfortable with that.
Really? I just could not. I was so happy that they didn't put her and Padma in the same shot because I would have just died.
Wait, Alex, you're throwing Kren under the bus?
We'll get there.
Really? You're going to blame Kren for this whole thing?
Blaming the Kren.
It was her menu.
Guys,
oh,
and
they, Alex.
I feel tempted to tell our audience there's a monster at the end of this book.
Look, I assume people have already seen this episode, so I just want to get into the controversy because I'm just so interested to hear what everybody has to say. Because I'll tell you this, I am conflicted. I am not sure how I feel, so I'm looking forward to hearing you guys, and hopefully you can help us. So let's first talk about this weird thing with the coaches because it's bizarre, but it's not quite to the controversy yet. I don't think we've ever had a like Tim Gunn character on this show. We never have someone walking around the kitchen telling them like how to make their food better.
Well, it's not really Tim Gunn either.
Not entirely true.
But, well, let's start with Megan.
Oh, well, Tim Gunn would like give them advice that the viewers can't really make sense of.
Yeah, this is like angry Tim Gunn. This is like Tim Gunn decides that it's his show now.
No, well I mean,
the
it's
Tim Gunn
to me
show.
Like they. No, it's
to
me like
the
these
Tim Gunn
coaches.
Show?
These coaches were actually determining the menu and like telling them how to do it. Like the guy like cut the potatoes for Nina. He wasn't going to even let her like choose how to cut the potatoes.
The cut,
yeah.
Yeah. Serrano did.
I mean, we're told to do so. I feel like it's worth saying. Like, they're not like weird control freaks. Like,
I'm sorry.
We don't have like Nicholas's and Carlos's like striding into the kitchen being like, this is what I do.
No, and I was not actually.
I feel like that was their job. That was their job. Yes. And yeah, had they not done so, they would have been told to do so.
Have we ever had that before on this show where it was they brought in executive chefs for the menu? Like, they were basically line cooks for these guys.
Yeah, which is so strange.
Well, there was the Eric Repair. It's just a strange challenge. There's the Eric Repair episode.
I don't remember what that one was.
They just had to like replicate every single dish at Eric Repair's restaurant.
Oh yeah, yeah, just replicating. That was interesting.
And they have that this season when they had to replicate dishes.
Yeah,
you're right.
That's a different. House. That's a different kind of challenge. Yeah, this is more like do what you want and cook, you know, with autonomy, but make what I tell you to make with the techniques that I'm telling you to use. So they kind of were given like more free range than replicate this, but at the same time, like, you got to make not a much. Damn nest out of corn silk, otherwise right. this it ain't was, gonna work.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I would never say they were told to Sarah, not to disagree with you, but I would never say they were told to cook with autonomy. I think they were told this is the menu, these are the techniques. And
it seemed
here's
like they
we
were
do.
Like they were helping come up with the menu, though. It wasn't just like here you go.
Yeah,
you know?
As long as it passed.
Yeah, it did have
you know,
to pass their
of the executive
their
chef.
Test.
But it definitely, we agree they had.
Specify what it is that the executive. So the executive chefs, Kren and Serrano, were there for the day before to help them shop and then prep. And then the day of the cooking, they were on their own.
Right? And then they were also at the, meal.
The
they were also at the meal where they were allowed to vigorously argue for their team, where they nearly went to blows
that was
over.
Adorable.
This chicken tastes the worst. Oh, I think my chicken is perfectly cooked.
Your chicken is exemplary of the new cooking, which I detest.
So here's the thing also is Serrano is old school Spanish. Yes. So he's cooking very traditional, classic dishes. And then Kren is new school French. And so she's cooking very avant-garde dishes, and that's how she plans their menu. And they were adorably biased, each of them, as far as the dishes.
Yeah, it was
like,
super cute.
If there was a Spanish dish, only the French chef would critique it. If there was a French dish, only the Spanish chef would critique it, and the other one would defend it. I thought it was adorable, the partisanship.
Yeah, I love the partisanship at the table. I thought that was funny. Ez, now lay out the controversy for us.
Okay, so basically, if you have done the math, when you have three people on a team and one of them has immunity...
Nicholas.
Yeah, like Nicholas, who is paired up with Shirley and Stephanie. If that team goes down, only one of those 50, two people who don't have immunity, they're going down too. So, Stephanie, Shirley, they kicked ass. Good for them. Bad for them is Nick, you know, he cooked like he had immunity, which includes making, fried corn silk, which I don't think is edible food, even if you fry it. So, slight oversight.
And, like, bitter chocolate chicken and...
Yeah.
And a bad dessert.
This was all not his composition, but at the same time, he was the one who cooked it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, even if someone gives you a bus to drive, if you crash that bus into, I don't know, kids, you're still a little bit responsible.
Get blamed for, breaking the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And on the other side, the other team of three made a good meal. Their dishes weren't as good as Shirley and Stephanie's. However, none of them were as bad as Nicholas's.
It helped that none of them had Nicholas on their team.
Right. Yeah. Did you guys notice that the judges table was the weirdest positive negative? Like the losing or the winning team, they basically just said what was wrong with the dishes and said that if the other team had done better, you would have lost. And then at the losing team, they were like, everything you guys did was incredible. This dish was so amazing. This melted in my mouth. This is the most beautiful thing I've ever tasted. Shirley and Stephanie, you guys are perfect. I want to marry you both. I love everything you've ever done. Nicholas, what happened? I mean, it felt like it was just so backwards. I've never seen anything like that. And
confusing, right?
Super confusing.
Consistency and like, being consistently good seemed to win out today over being occasionally great.
That's what they had to decide for the winning team.
And that's a tough choice. But at the same time, what wound up sending, either Stephanie or Shirley home was a chicken dish that, didn't amaze any of the judges. It was just like, this was a dish that was fine. And we have to decide what part of this dish should send somebody.
Which one are you talking about? The mousse?
No, the chicken dish with the mousse everything else.
Wait, that was that wasn't the one with the consummate they loved?
No, the mousse was the one with the broth. You're talking about the chicken with the chocolate.
Yeah.
Well, there was the chicken with the chocolate, and then there. Oh yeah.
The Cornish game hen with chocolate wasn't just okay; it was awful.
No, yeah, but the Stephanie Shirley shared dish.
Yeah, that was a chicken liver mousse
thing. Was
the one
where it was fine. Yeah. And nobody.
Oh, they said the bottle.
They loved it.
What are you talking about?
Mm. Loved.
The mousse was the best bite that Padma had had all night.
Yeah, look, yeah. From Hugh Atchison's blog. The chicken liver mousse
was fantastic.
Yeah, intense and well loved.
Chocolate and the corn silk that was.
Guys, one at a time. Pause. One at a time.
All right.
I think their problem with that dish was figuring out who did the best that dish, because they needed to figure out who was the most successful, so that they knew who to send home, I think.
So they end up, we'll just wrap this up and then start talking about it. So even though the only dish all night that they hated was Nicholas's, and they hated both of his desserts, that team lost, had to be one of the ladies. They decided Stephanie was, by some wafer thin margin, the worst of the two.
Wafer thin.
And they sent Stephanie home. But not before guest judge which one? Kren?
Jacques Pepin.
Jacques Pepin. Suggested that Nicholas should throw himself on the sword, either by taking himself out or literally by killing himself. I couldn't Pepin was angry. And Nicholas opted to not take himself out. So let's
keep his immunity,
which he'd won, right? To not throw
in
himself
his
out.
This is the first quick fire he's ever been on the top three, and the first that he's ever won in the entire year.
Oh wow! So he's riding high from that. Okay, so let's start here. This is the question that there's. Let's start here and work backwards. Should he have taken himself out? What do you guys think? Let's start in San Francisco. I'm curious what you guys have to say.
I think it would have been the nice person thing to do, and it would have made me like him more, but I certainly understand why he didn't do it. It's a competition, blah, 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 and he wants to win, and he won immunity. That's the game. So I like him less for making that decision, for sure, but I can't really blame him for it either.
As you look upset.
Well, no, I think generally it's right. I mean, like, they made a... I think the producers crafted this in this way to make it happen. Like, really? So I think it's kind of unfair to like sort of like point to, like, if you give immunity like on a team challenge, this late in the game, like, I think it's a good chance that eventually you're gonna have some kind of weird controversy where like this could happen. This is like very foreseeable.
So I agree with you that the main fault here is in giving immunity with six people. And then doubling down on that problem by having it be a team challenge. You're suggesting that was not an accident?
I mean, I feel like after 11 seasons, they must kind of have a sense of, like, you know, at some point we'll have like a controversy here. Like, this should not be a huge surprise. I think like this was kind of by design a little bit. I don't think they just kept an immunity. I think they wanted to have a controversial elimination.
Fascinating. Well, it's worked. They've got it. If that's what happened, I don't think I have your level of cynicism, but that's fascinating.
And I don't know. I just think that like to ask. Yeah, I think it's kind of BS to ask Nicholas to do it, like to leave, because it's like, well, you guys designed a pretty shitty game. Like, I just won the game. You shouldn't make me out to be the bad guy. I think he could have done it in a better way. Like, it's like, look, he's like, say, like, I think this is really messed up. You know, I think they should not be going home. But I'm not sending them home. You guys are.
So I wanted to actually
we had somebody. Sorry, Alex. We did have a listener email us to that effect, that it was pretty shady of the judges to ask Nicholas to give up the immunity.
So we'll start there. We'll get Jay into the conversation. Jay emailed us and said that he was really upset about that. He thinks it was a total cheap shot to suggest that Nick has to walk away from the show. And that he should have just like quit the show then out of protest, not to resign, but because it's taken away the integrity of the show, was Jay's point. And I wanted to start. I totally understand where you're coming from on that, but that's why I wanted to say it the way I did, to be clear that Chef Pepin is the one who asked him if he would resign, and Chef Pepin is not a producer of the show. He's just a chef who tasted food and was watching a guy who sucked cause someone else to lose a competition. Yeah. It was if Tom had said it, would have been different. And if the executive producers had walked out and said it, then it would have been really messed up.
Well, absolutely. Sure. And Tom was the one who said, you know, that's the game we're playing. And his comment was, you know, that's the game.
I thought Tom was more passive aggressive about it. He was like, sure, I guess you don't have to resign. But he, the one who asked it was somebody who was not involved in the show. It was just a guest judge.
Right.
Well, we don't know that it was Jacques Pepin's idea to ask that question. It was edited that way.
The way it was edited made that seem like the case. Exactly. And I trust them with that.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I do, because Tom clearly shared that opinion, because when they were discussing it after they left, he said, I'm still hoping that Nicholas will come out here and fall on the sword.
Right, right.
And he said, I'm still hoping that. And we don't know when, you know, it could have been his suggestion, or it could have been a group.
That seems deliberately misleading in a way that I don't think the editors have been thus far. If I was Tom, I think I would definitely have hoped for that as well. And I think there's nothing wrong with hoping for it. I think it's rude to ask him and to put him on the spot like that. But there's nothing wrong with hoping that he does, because Tom also didn't decide whether or not there was an immunity with six people. So the judges could also. It felt to me like the judges were also frustrated by what the show had created, and I think that's reasonable for them to express that,
or at least frustrated with the outcome of what the immunity.
What Ezra believes is a foreseeable consequence of this, an inevitable consequence of this setup.
Well, yeah, and as correct me if I'm wrong, but you see that as something that, like, you know, must have been a possible outcome and perhaps even a likely outcome.
Right.
Yeah. But eventually,
you may not have seen that as, you know. I'm not sure your position is the judges knew this would happen.
No.
No, but the producers were like,
I think this was an unfortunate.
Aware this could definitely happen.
Yeah,
it could be an outcome.
So,
and it did happen.
So the question that I have is, the question that I'm wondering with is not whether, like, so okay, so the question of whether or not they should have told him that, I think we can agree it is over the line to say, for a judge to say, you should throw yourself out. Or even to ask him, would you consider that? That seems over the line.
I don't know if it's over the line to ask the question, would you do this? But I think it's over the line to ask him to.
Yeah. I agree with that. Let's get Brooklyn now. Do you guys think that he should have thrown himself out? Even regardless of whether or not he should be asked, do you think that that would have been a better thing for him to do?
Tanya?
It's really hard to say. I guess this is the point at which I will say, I feel like it was interesting to get both Shirley and Stephanie's take on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like the way that they did that, and this, I think, I will probably repeat myself in saying that I felt like the way that they handled the situation was really graceful and really diplomatic. And I felt like they both really, they were their best selves in regard to this whole debacle, as far as saying, like, you know, if it were me, this is what I would do. And both of them said, like, I would abdicate my immunity and I would go ahead and bow out because this was my fault. And I felt like that was the route I would take if I were in Nicholas's position.
You would have stayed in if you were Nicholas?
No. I would have gone ahead and said, you know, this was my fault and I don't want immunity. I want to bow out. I just feel like that was the right thing to do.
Yeah. I'll answer that part of the question for myself, is I think definitely the right move for him was to resign. And that's, but I mean, not because it's not the way the game works, but because, like, when I talked to the executive producers of the show, one of the things they said was the gamesmanship on the show is very low. Most of the chefs don't play like, I'm going to set up the odds so that I can have a chance. There's not a lot of sabotage because there is an honor code that's going on. And part of the thing of Top Chef is coming off as an honorable chef because you're trying to impress your peers. And so I think he played within the rules of the game, but he also made a poorly calculated decision in that now he looks like a terrible person to his peers. And he had an opportunity to look like a really respectful guy. And if you are relying on immunity to get by with six chefs, you're not going to win.
You're absolutely right. This is a bad time in the game to make that kind of a power play. It's just not in your best interest, really. Yeah.
I don't think it's in your career interest at all. I think it is in your interest for the game, but I think it's not. And you guys are here for your career or your kids, ostensibly.
Well, okay. And maybe I'm going to spoil the conversation here because I have almost the exact opposite opinion of Alex, which is basically like, immunity, like, even though the chefs try to cook their best food and they try to respect one another, immunity and an immediate pass to the next round, another shot at a lot of money that could make their next restaurant happen or something like that, still means a lot to these chefs. And the same thing that happened to Carrie when she cooked the broccoli at the LSU challenge basically happened to Nick, right? He got a crap menu idea and he cooked it the best he could. He had immunity. And if, like, what would have happened as far as our emotional reaction is if instead of calling out all of Team French, Padma had just called out Shirley and Stephanie, you know, because he had immunity. I think that so much of this game is based on, you know, let's get to that finale. And the fact that the game is such that Nick automatically got to that finale, like, asking him to give that up is too much. I think it's too much. And the fact is, like, somebody had to go home. Somebody did go home, and it could not have been Nick. He had earned that with the quickfire.
I think,
and it's his to give up, and to ask him to do so is disrespectful.
I agree with that, and I think we agree that it's disrespectful to ask. And I don't think I disagree with you on any of the points, just the conclusion. So I think the thing that he's missing is he has no chance of winning $100,000. His chance of winning the show is 0%.
Oh, I disagree.
I think he would have to be... he has to be very full of himself to think, after having seen all this cooking, that he can compete with these people, especially given how badly he fell apart tonight and how badly he's fallen apart on several occasions. If this was the finale and it was like, you could throw yourself out or you could win $100,000, I would say, sure, take the money. But I feel like at this, even if it was the one before, there's no way Nicholas has a chance of winning this show. And
you don't think?
No.
I mean, didn't he win Restaurant Wars? And
he did win Restaurant Wars.
He won Restaurant Wars.
He peaked early, though, I feel like. I don't think he's had... I feel like the last couple of weeks, I think...
He peaked in the middle because he did nothing early on, and then he did really well, and then he's fallen apart again. I think there's no way that he's going to outcook the other chefs. And I think the fact that he was not just the last place today, he was a distant last place. And there was the moment where, with Stephanie, where she said, let's not serve this, this is gross. And he said, no, this is good. And she said, it's my ass. And he overrode her to make sure that this terrible thing got on the dish that Tom said looked like it belonged in his floor drain. I think shows that his judgment is at just he's playing at a different level. He's got
shower
no chance
drain.
Of winning.
Shower drain. Yeah.
It's not like Tom Colicchio has an apartment made of shower with floor drains every place.
It's in the floor in a shower. I think that's still a floor drain.
Alex, how can anybody get this far without believing they can make it to the finale? You know, it's about grit. It's about keeping on. And the fact that even if you think that Nina's going to kick
Chris,
his ass...
I don't think
win?
Brian thinks he can get to the finale.
There's no way Brian can get to the finale.
I think he does.
And
I
really
have to.
Here's another interesting thing strategic-wise, or the design of the challenge today. Nicholas getting immunity didn't just save himself from going home. Those girls, Stephanie and Shirley, saved Brian from going home. Because if they hadn't cooked so well, no wait, the other way, the other two girls on Brian's team, if the Brian's team hadn't cooked so well, they would have been on the bottom, and Brian was an easy way to go home. And if they hadn't called
he was almost on the bottom by default. The way the judges talked about him, and then they talked great about Nina and Carlos's food.
Yeah.
Who made the dessert? Did he make the dessert?
It was Brian's dessert.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they hated it.
But they liked that chicken thing.
The one that he made with Carlos. Yeah.
Right.
The arroz con pollo. So I guess my point is this: is had Spanish not if the other team hadn't brought Brian up, or had the challenge been set up where you could eliminate one person and not have to pick a team and then a loser. Brian's going home because Brian was the second worst by a long shot. So Brian got saved by good knife block draw, which, by the way, go knife block.
Classic
knife
Brian.
Block.
Yeah, classic
knife
Brian.
Knife block came back.
But yeah, so Brian has, I mean, Brian and Nicholas both have a 0% chance of winning. And I think this was just, I think he has a better chance of making a good
showing.
Or a 20%
chance if you count what chance means.
No, that would be assuming that every episode was a random winner and loser, and it's not random, it's skill-based, and we have evidence. Yeah.
Except with Brian.
Except Brian. Brian is entirely chance-based for some reason.
My final kind of thought about this is, like, I don't think Nick did anything wrong, but I do think he had a chance to do something right, and he didn't take that.
Totally. I think that's well said. That's exactly
really
what
good
I thought.
Way to put it as.
That's poetic. I guess.
Oh, come on!
No, I mean, like, basically, I think that we all are reacting as audience members, and we have to think about what's right with regards to being a competitor in this challenge. And Nick did what's right as a competitor. And as an audience, we have an emotional reaction to that. And that's about watching TV and it being good TV for us. But ultimately, like, I don't have a problem with what happened.
No, I... Wait. Go ahead, Megan. You first.
Oh, I just want to say one thing that I think is definitely true. And that is that Nick has lost any moral high ground that he ever had, which he didn't have.
He never had any.
In the Carlos fight.
Which he didn't have any.
No, yeah.
In the Carlos... carping
debacle
that he's been doing.
Yeah.
Sticky knife, Megan. Yeah. Sticky knife.
Yeah, no, I actually he had moral high ground to lose and he has lost it. For sure.
I entirely agree with that. Actually, we had Marianne wrote in to tell us that let me pull up the exact quote because this is really good. She said I hope that Stephanie spills super glue on Nick's favorite knife and then dips it in sand. So there.
So, yeah. 1,000 yeah. garlands to you, Marianne.
I do think that Stephanie's kind of a lock for fan favorite now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, well, that's what I think, though. One of the things that's important with Top Chef, it's different from like Big Brother. Because this is an industry, and you're meeting people in the industry who are judging you, and these are people who could give you jobs, that you're, yeah. if you think of Top Chef as a game to win $100,000, you're very short-sighted. I think, just like with Blaze, it is possible to lose the title of Top Chef and win Top Chef, like Richard mm-hmm. Blaze did. And
or
I
Fabio.
Or Fabio, or a lot of people.
Or Fabio's turtle.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to win the show to get a lot out of it, but you can win the show and get nothing out of it besides the money. Or you can come in Nicholas's case, fifth place, and get nothing out of it. And I think he had a chance to try to save some of his career, whereas Stephanie went out and is not going to be worse. Like, had she been in second, it would have been no better than her right now. She got as mm-hmm. much as, like, respect from peers. Hugh Atchison wrote a beautiful letter to her on the blog Aww. About how she's yeah. great, and she has a rich future ahead of her, and her food is awesome. And, like, she's
Emerald's darling.
Yeah, she's Emerald's darling. She could get a job from Emerald anytime she wanted, you know, probably a restaurant investment if she wanted it. Like, she did great. Nicholas looks like a jerk, and I think it was short-sighted of him not to try to save his reputation over trying to save his chance at $100,000.
You're right.
I have a question to ask everybody.
Yes.
If this had been Nicholas and instead of Stephanie, and you guys are going to have to stretch your imaginations.
Oh, man.
If this had been Brian Mystery Ficus Husky instead of Stephanie, if the places had been changed, would we feel the same like outpouring of sympathy and support and like utter, you know, outrage? Like, would it be the same?
That is such a good
no
question.
And his dish was Stephanie's dish, or his dish was the bad dessert?
No, his dish Lose. Was Stephanie's dish. Like, if yeah. he had cooked something in the comparable slot, like if
the was, musical oh. chairs thing had ended and he had ended up with that dish.
But, yeah. And because I no, really, they... because so much of this, I really do feel like so much of this is us as an audience being used to this narrative arc. And this ties into Last Chance Kitchen as well, like where you feel like the justice arc is one thing and what actually happens might be something else.
Mm-hmm. This is
but
such a great question. I love it.
When it comes to like what you really, really want and who you really, really believe in, like you cannot help but feel a certain way.
Right.
This I is think, good question, Megan.
Yeah. I think that would have been great for Brian. I think that would have made me...
a chance to go
I'm
out.
I'm sorry that this didn't happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would have been awesome
then he
for
could have
him
because
he's
moral
not going to win.
But yeah. There's no way he's going out better than that.
Yeah. Yeah.
He does
so,
go.
Megan, what I'm hearing is you still think that Nick should have fallen on his sword for the sake of Brian Husky.
No. It would have been great for Brian to have some righteous indignation when he left because he's not going to leave thinking he's the best. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this would have been a good exit for him where he could have at least been like, I wasn't the worst. I was second worst.
Yeah. I guess my question, and the only way that I have to recontextualize this, is like, what if this was the third elimination challenge where something like this happened? And it wasn't six chefs left.
Well, so...
You know, like asking somebody to give up their immunity when there are 12 chefs left seems like ridiculous,
well,
right? Why wouldn't
so
Harry
I have a,
had immunity?
I have a couple of clarifying things I want to do. But Ezra, you want to make a point first?
Yeah. I mean, I think that... No, I got nothing.
All right, let me Keep clarify going. This then. So one of the things that I think is really important is that Stephanie went home for cooking two dishes that were incredible, Yep. And Shirley cooked two dishes that were incredible. So if it was Brian Husky,
more incredible.
Yeah, yeah, sure. But so had it been like, if it was the same setup, but they didn't have to eliminate within the same team, so they could just eliminate Brian for his flan, then nobody feels bad about this at all. If you like, when we were not upset when Carrie didn't throw herself on her knife for cooking the broccoli with yogurt. So it's not just getting a save from your with immunity. The problem is, I think, is not, it's also that it's late in the show, but it's mostly just that they were forced to eliminate somebody who did incredible work. And that's really, that's what's so sad. So if it was on the second episode, but all 15 chefs cooked the best food Tom had ever tasted, and they had to pick a worst of that, we would still be angry. It's just, it's the about the quality of the loser's food that's so upsetting.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it's contextual.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Fair enough.
I think I remember what I was going to say. Basically, just I think the thing that's kind of sticking in our craw about this is that it represents a fundamentally unfair world, I guess. It's kind of like the way like Game of Thrones is sometimes, where it's just like, you know, just like
there's a wedding and you're supposed to be happy.
Well, just like he's like, yeah, here, Top Chef, bad guy wins. Yeah, and like that's it. Like there's nothing you can do about it, and just bad guy wins.
Actually,
but they spell the rules ahead of time. They say this guy gets immunity because he won the.
Well, let's talk about this then. I think you guys are both leading to one obvious conclusion, which is maybe the problem is immunity in any context.
Oh, absolutely.
I think maybe what we're coming to is maybe this is a show where immunity is never helpful. It's either ignored or it's really shitty. What has immunity done for you?
Think about the small number of times when a chef with immunity has treated that immunity like freedom and actually cooked their best food and won a challenge.
Yeah, or
that's happened though.
That happens quite like frequently. Twice. No. It happens actually quite frequently. More frequently than twice.
So you think the value of immunity is that sometimes it lets people be more free in their menu planning, and so they might do something great.
I think
it gets them to reach.
Yeah, I think at its best, it is a free pass to take a risk. And at its worst, it is, you know, broccoli with dip.
One other thing about broccoli with dip, though, was that she intentionally took a harder station to let people who didn't have immunity have a chance to shine. So even though we were kind of squishy on whether that worked, she at least thought she was doing a solid.
But risky cold food is not like a non-existent idea. Like she could have done something chancy.
Yeah, yeah, totally. She could have tried a lot harder. Exactly.
And she really didn't. But, and I think, I mean, and I guess I just feel like, you know, like really taking, I think what makes for more exciting food television in like the best possible way is a person who really like sees that as an opportunity to do something that really challenges like the viewer and the taster and, you know, people who do that.
Totally agree. But I would say that chance is probably lower than the chance of something horrible happening. I would be fine if there was never immunity ever again.
But by the way, guys, Risky Cold Food was Tom Cruise's unproduced sequel to Risky Business.
It's mostly just about stuff that had been in the refrigerator for too long and he wasn't sure if he could eat it. Yeah.
I guess really a concern. This used to be tuna fish, right?
Well, so we want to hear what you guys had to say. I think we should probably wrap up that. We should pull that to the end so we can get out of here. No, it's great.
Oh, and Nina won.
Nina won. Hey, surprise.
For a really good potato salad.
Yeah.
Way to kill it.
Actually, she was seriously doubting that potato salad. It was a really good win for her to know that her technique was so good and solid on that.
I also want to point out that Tom was so mad that just like you're worth your weight in salt, Tom also bumbled a classic saying where in his exit speech, he was so angry. He was like, Nicholas, you're the reason this team is here. But you have immunity, so you're not going home. But it's like the old saying goes, it's not always fair in love and war. Which, the saying is, all's fair in love and war. Secondarily, this is neither love nor war.
I did notice that.
Not applicable at all. So
Tom, stick to fishing.
Yeah, go fishing.
Also,
go ahead, Tom.
I can wait till last
final thought? It's okay. All right, well, let's jump into Last Chance Kitchen.
Last Chance Kitchen is where this belongs.
Yeah. Well, let's do it. Megan, do you want to tell us what happened in Last Chance Kitchen?
Yes, in Last Chance Kitchen, Stephanie's looking for redemption.
Vindication.
Vindication, which I think is different, and I'm not sure how vindication works here, but she's looking for something.
Yeah.
Redemption.
Redemption. To prove her worth, you know?
I mean, she's looking to get back in the show. Anyway.
And so they bring out Emeril, and Emeril has
Eliminated her twice.
Eliminated her twice. The first time being last season when everyone was cooking to get on to get their jacket. And he presents the challenge of making beignets, which is a New Orleans food that hasn't been featured as a challenge yet on the show.
It's a donut.
Yeah. It's a donut, yeah.
It's a donut. Blob donut. Yeah.
Yeah, it has some specific things to it, but it's donut.
Yeah, no hole. Yeah. Holeless donut.
Fritter.
A fritter.
Yeah.
So the challenge is to make both a sweet beignet and a savory beignet.
And it's Stephanie against Lewis, and Lewis wins with pine nut and persimmon and white chocolate, and then a crab garlic over Stephanie's cherry and white chocolate and andouille sausage and corn. Most importantly, Lewis wins for a baking soda donut over a yeast donut, which doesn't quite rise for Stephanie.
Yeah, the yeast takes a little too long to rise, although Stephanie's sweet donut was better than Lewis's sweet donut. Her savory was better than his savory.
Mm-hmm.
His sweet with the persimmon was better than her cherry white chocolate. So right. Hers aired on the side of dense. His aired on the side of greasy.
Yeah.
But apparently dense was worse than greasy, and Lewis wins to fight another day.
Alex, how do you feel about necessarily having one dish with white chocolate win?
Yeah, I mean, it's so sad that it ended up white chocolate versus white chocolate, because one of them was going to get...
It wasn't white chocolate on fish. It was actually something that made sense.
Well, that's definitely true. But still, it was like somebody was going to get patted on the back for a white chocolate dish, and I felt pretty bad about that.
Yeah, that's a real injustice to this episode.
The true controversy finally comes out.
So Lewis, pulling it out, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
Man of destiny.
Wins again. Stephanie said, I read an interview with Stephanie where she said she basically just... fell apart at that point, that she'd been smart the whole show and all of a sudden she just wasn't thinking straight, and so that was her real problem with it. She thought that it was just a dumb decision to go with the yeast. What do you guys think?
She also said at the end of she didn't know a baking soda beignet recipe.
Oh, that's true, and she did say that. But she seemed to think she'd been making smart decisions all along and then was just stupid in that moment. So maybe she could have come. I mean, he didn't know one either. He just made dough and it worked. So
yeah, I was lucky.
Yeah.
It was very
it's a bummer, but I feel like, I don't know, she didn't go out on bad dishes. Like,
no.
I think she can have, you know, fan favorites. She should be all right.
Yeah. And even though Emeril cut her three times of all the times she was cut. she went out on a good note, I think, and everybody knows it.
Yeah, she shouldn't have that many regrets.
She had just, like, the most, like, fantastic, dignified exit.
She did. She was so good. Exit interviews are so hard, and she was great every time. She said something wonderful. All of the interviews I've read with her have been really good. I think she's got a bright future. I think she'll be fine.
Didn't she tweet you or something, or tweet us, or what happened with Twitter?
Did we tweet things?
We tweeted at her a while back and said she was great, and she said thanks. So she's been, she at least reads her Twitter.
What?
Although,
oh my God.
In her...
Thanks.
I'm trying to get her to do an interview.
Have my reaction to any response on Twitter ever.
This Twitter thing's incredible.
I do want her to... I would love for her to do an interview with us, but I don't think... I don't have high hopes. But...
She's probably not allowed to until the show's over, don't you think?
Well, I read reviews with her, so it is possible.
Some kind of ending.
Yeah. And actually, Shirley did a nice interview recently about this last episode. So her and Stephanie both did interviews, and they both said the same thing. It's like, you know, I can't act for this guy. I would have done this thing, but, you know, I guess.
She doesn't hold it against him at all. She was very, very cool. Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
I would like to hang out with her sometime. I think she seems nice. So before we go,
cream soda.
Final thoughts. I feel like it was sort of an anticlimactic Last Chance Kitchen. It was just like, oh well. But Lewis is still keeping the dream alive, and that's impressive.
Yeah. I like Lewis more and more.
Yeah, for sure. So one last thought before we go then. The last thing I want to say is that Megan and I went and got authentic Vietnamese food a couple weeks ago. And
in New Orleans?
No, we were in Salt Lake, and they claimed to be authentic. But here's the important thing. Two different dishes on the menu that had a creamy tomato sauce.
Wow.
Captain Vietnam.
Yeah, comes through.
But did you have either of them, and were they good?
I did not have either of them, so they could have been terrible, but I don't think that was the issue. The issue is whether
it could just be like everyone in Vietnam just hates these tomato dishes, but they can't get rid of them.
Oh, that would be an interesting situation.
Yeah.
Actually, come to think of it, the Vietnamese restaurant that I eat at often for lunch it has like a tomato-based tilapia sauce. Tilapia with tomato-based sauce.
Yeah, it was on a fish dish at this place, yeah.
I've had a tomato and crab soup, I think, that was Vietnamese.
I just want to say that while we've settled definitively this controversy, that one lives on.
Mm. And the pea puree, right?
And the pea puree. The pea puree will live on forever. There is no answer to that one.
Oh, unless, Alex. What? Mysterious Sphinx.
Any final thoughts, you guys? Alex, right. Any final thoughts, you guys, before we leave? All right. Well,
can Lewis beat Brian?
Yes, I think Lewis will beat Brian next week. I think that's a good chance.
God willing, Mystery Ficus will be the next one and last chance.
Are we all of the opinion that Nina and Shirley are two out of the three that are?
Oh God, I hope so.
But it's just definitely, yeah.
Unless something terrible happens, but like Nina has been so consistent, and Shirley too. It's been kind of amazing. I mean, Shirley's got an air conditioner, and like she.
A car for her grandpa.
That's what it was. Yeah.
That's actually. We got a little bit of a spoiler. There was some controversy on this episode. I didn't know what it was, so like I was just looking out for the controversy while I was watching it. So I thought that like as soon as Nina felt like uncomfortable with like the potato salad, I thought she was going home.
Yeah, we got some listener mail before we actually had a chance to watch the episode, and so we didn't look at it. We just saw the beginning. This episode sucks, and so I was on edge the whole episode for what was going to go.
Me too. I was going to say there was like this overwhelming response that really like set me on edge the whole time.
Yeah, and actually, the final controversy was way less than I thought they were going to like suspend the rules and send three people home because they were mad at them or something. Like,
yeah, I thought someone was going to stab someone.
Yeah, or Marcel was going to be a guest judge and they were going to hold him down and shave his head or something while he was judging. I don't know. I thought something worse than this was going to happen.
They were going to shave Padma's head. It's like reverse.
Oh no. Marcel shaves Padma's head. I would be angry. That would be the worst episode.
God. Although of all the judges, she'd look pretty good with a shaved head.
She'd probably
could pull it off.
Knowing her, she would.
Wait, they just like, okay, so they give her a bald cap and they give Tom a wig.
Oh, I would watch
photos
that.
Of early Tom when he has the
when he has hair. Yeah, it's goofy. All right, so thank you guys so much for listening. Please tell us what you think of the controversy. Get in there, jump on packyourmics.com, click on this episode and tell us in the comments. You can also tweet at us at packyourmics, and you can talk to us on facebook.com/packyourmics. Also, if you want to support our show, the best way to do that is whenever you're purchasing something from Amazon anyway, go to packyourmics.com/amazon and it'll redirect to the site, and then anything you buy we get a small percentage of, and we really appreciate that. So Chris, I'm sorry I gotta tell you this.
Huh?
Yeah.
I thought I had immunity.
No, we didn't actually discuss that. Oh. And there's only six of us, so there's never been immunity with only six podcasters. But Ezra, this was totally your fault. Chris, pack your mics and go.
Well, I had a good run. Thank you. All right. I hope I get a job later.
We'll talk to everybody next week. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.